Hello, and welcome to How She Really Does It with Corinne. You're tuned to KDRT, LP in Davis, California, 101.5 FM. I'm a mom, a wife, a coach, an educator, a friend, and most importantly, a woman. I've always been interested in people's journeys, and since becoming a mom, I've been wondering in bewilderment how she really does it. This talk show is meant to inspire, empower, entertain, and be a resource for women. Each week, there will be a different topic focusing on what women face in their day-to-day life. This show will provide an opportunity for women to learn from each other and learn how she really does it. Do you ever wonder how others balance family, work, volunteering, marriage, self, friends, financial issues, children and sports, parenting and school, religion and family, race and gender issues, career and family, physical training? You can email me at howshe@gmail.com. This morning, we have Dawn
Dais.
Dais, thank you. Author of The Non-Runner's Marathon Guide for Women. She's here to discuss her book about marathon training and as well as her upcoming adventure, Helping to Rebuild New Orleans. Welcome, Dawn.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming today.
I just made it.
She literally just made it.
I ran in here because I run everywhere.
There we go. So why run a marathon?
Well, there's a lot of reasons to train for a marathon. I always tell people that the marathon is really the least of what you're going to get out of the whole experience. Once you get to marathon day, once you get to that start line, you've already pretty much completed everything, you know, because you've been 3 or 4 months training and you're going to run 300 miles in those 3 to 4 months. And that's really where you're going to be tested. And you can do it for, you know, your physical appearance. You can do it to expand yourself mentally and physically. There's all sorts of reasons to do it. And I think it's on a lot of people's list of things to do. It was never on mine.
I saw that.
people just have it like this. It's because it's seen as this huge challenge. You know, people want to challenge themselves. And I definitely saw it as a challenge, but it was a challenge I had no interest in taking on. You know, I could also go to the moon, but I don't really want to. But so I just decided to do it. And there's a lot to be found in marathon training that doesn't have anything to do with marathon training. It's just yourself and what you can find in it.
Well, one of the things reading your book, you were very honest about, because it is a notch in a lot of people's belts, the whole marathon training. And I, too, have never gotten it. And I've been an athlete and I've done all this stuff, but it's never I just even have a hard time understanding why somebody would pay to go run a 5K, because you could just go out your door and run a 5K. So, you know, to do a marathon, that's not on my list of things to do. But I was intrigued after reading your book. I'm like, well, maybe. There was the maybe thought. So there was the thought where never before. So now you refer to yourself in the book a lot that you were a couch potato prior to doing the marathon training. Were you an athlete?
I was always athletic. I was an only child, and my dad kind of wanted a boy. So I played every sport. Like, my dad, and in the book, I thanked him for taking me out there and playing every sport with me. And a lot of times, girls aren't given those opportunities as kids, or they're not. It's assumed that they're not going to do that kind of stuff. But sports are so good for girls, and it makes them – there's a confidence that comes with playing sports and being part of a team and challenging yourself when you're a kid. But I still – even when I was a kid, I was lazy. But I grew up in a neighborhood with a lot of boys, and so I'd go out and play with the boys. I was a total tomboy. But the difference between sports and a marathon, because I'm very competitive, very, very competitive. But there's running, and why I really like the people, why I really like runners is they're competitive with themselves. Uh-huh. They're so supportive, and they're such nice, calm people because they're out there competing against themselves. You can see when someone goes across the finish line at 4 hours and 30 minutes, they're just as happy as someone that comes across the finish line at 6 hours and 30 minutes because they have an idea in their mind what they want to do, and it's a competition against themselves. So, but I need to be competing against somebody else. So, like, I always played soccer and I played softball and basketball. Soccer was my sport, but you're going after someone and you're trying to slide tackle them and you want to hurt them. And so that's
the
motivation,
enemy.
Right? Like, yeah. There's no motivation in marathon training. It's just you want to not die, and that's pretty much it. And you want to cry, and that's, you know. So that was the most difficult part for me, because it was just you have to really go inside your own head and find a reason to do it instead of, you know, something external.
Well, and you also mentioned earlier that it's not just the 26.2 miles. It's all those months, all those weeks, all the mileage that you do going into the race. And that seems like the hardest part in a sense.
Well, yeah, because marathon day, there's people, there were fireworks at mine, you know, like you've got people holding signs and cheering, and there's parties and music, and like that's kind of exciting. If it wasn't exciting to me, but it you know, like that can get you going. But there's no people holding signs or fireworks on Saturday morning at 7 a.m. when you have to get up and run 3 miles on Saturday, next Saturday 5 miles, next Saturday 7 miles, next Saturday 9 miles, next Saturday 11 miles. Like, in every single one of those things is its own little race, is its own little marathon, and you have to be the one that gets you to do it. And so that's where the challenge comes in, and the focus and the determination, and you have to keep getting up and you have to keep doing it. It's not just one day, you know. And I said in the book, once you get to marathon day, you're ready. Like, when you get to that start line, you already are a success, you know. So at that point, just have fun with it and try not to get too down on yourself about anything that may go wrong or whatever. Just have fun with it. But it's those months before that are really going to challenge you.
Yeah, it's a lot like life in so many ways, because, you know, a lot of times whether you're watching a sporting event or you're watching the Olympics or you're watching, you know, final production, like a theater production, you see the end result, but you don't see the work that goes into that end result that might be a real short amount of time compared to the amount of time for the preparation, like with the marathon training. So like you said, it's the big kind of like the big party. It's the big, here we go. There's a lot of rush. There's a lot of adrenaline. There's people. There's going to be pineapples at the end, right? There's going to be all that stuff. But it's pretty grueling going through that journey part.
And that's why people, when you see them on TV after running, you know, a 50-meter dash really, really well, and they win, and they're so excited because they work so hard to get to that point. But one of the things I say in the book is to not only be focusing on that moment, I would call it like my slow motion moment, because you see it whenever you see it on TV, the video slows down and people are cheering, you know, and there's people are crying and it's wonderful. And we're all looking for that moment. But if you focus too much on that moment, you're going to miss all the moments along the way. The little things and the little changes in yourself. The fact that, like, after my 7 mile run, I just fell down on the ground and just sat there, and my heart was beating so fast, and it's just like echoing in my ears. And I was exhausted, but at the same time, I'm like, I've never challenged my body to this extent, you know, to really see how far I can go. And it's exhausting, but it's also kind of inspiring. You go, okay, I can do this. And to just sit there and take it in, okay, I finished 7 miles. It's hard for me, especially after you finish 7 miles, to not think, oh God, tomorrow I have to do 9 miles, or next week I have to do 9 miles. And you have to stop and say, I just did 7 miles. And, you know, 2 months ago, I was like, you know, you spend 20 minutes looking for the remote instead of getting up and just changing the TV. And I just ran 7 miles, you know, it's ridiculous. But that's the thing you need to focus on, is take in every single moment, every single little moment, and really appreciate it. And then, of course, the final moment is exciting too. But for me, it was the little moments along the way. And you really, the journey is that whole journey is a destination. And that's really where you're going to find, you know, the rewards of marathon training.
Those moments, and really celebrating those moments, that's something that's really important once again in life, because, you know, we're rushing so far, we're so booked, we're overbooked, we've got so many things going on, and sometimes we forget to, you know, stop and smell the roses, as they would say, or really appreciate, wow, and be thankful for what they've accomplished or what's going on right now, and really paying attention. You know, because we're planning. We're such a planning society. Okay, we know what we're going to do in 6 months, in a year, whatnot. And what about today? So that's a really good concept with athletics and just with your training, with your book. So how did you learn to – and the reason I liked your book was that you're not a runner. You don't have a running background. And you call yourself the couch potato. So you're a person that, you know – and so this book really shows me that really anyone can do it. You know, you can go, you have a goal, you try to do it. And so, but how did you learn how to train for a marathon?
Well, I did it. I signed up for a fundraising marathon training team, which I highly recommend to, well, I highly recommend becoming a part of a group. I mean, you can do it by yourself, and I'm sure there's people that do it by themselves, but it's really, really important to be responsible to someone and to have people that are going to call you and be like, how'd your run go? Are you going to get the run? How many miles did you run? And it's just easier just to go do it instead of, you know, trying to avoid their calls or whatever. And you have to find something you're going to be responsible for, because the first couple of weeks, yay, I'm training, yay. But it's like 3 or 4 months of your life. And so, you know, the honeymoon phase wears off really, really quickly. And then you have to have something that you're going to be responsible to. And so for me, it was, I was doing it as a fundraiser for the American Stroke Association, and my grandfather had passed away earlier in the year, and I wanted to do something in his memory, something like profound. And he'd had a stroke years prior, when I was like, maybe before I was even born, actually. And so I felt like this would be pretty profound because I'm a couch potato and don't like running or moving really on the whole. And so I thought about it for a couple weeks, and then I decided I was going to do it. And to me, that's what kept me going, was because I made a commitment. When I asked people to give me money for it, and in essence, I was promising them that I was going to finish, even though I think a lot of them didn't think I really was, but they just kind of enjoyed hearing how horrible it was, the whole process. They were like, oh, here's some money. That's funny. Your kneecap fell off. Here's $50, you know? And so that's what got me going. Everybody needs to find their own thing of how they're going to get up every day to go do it.
We're talking with Dawn
Dais.
Dais. Author of the Non-Runner's Marathon Guide for Women. And we're talking about, because so you did a fundraising marathon, and in your book you referred to sending out emails to your friends and supporters. So that was how they would get the updates, or they would hear about your knee falling off or whatnot.
Yeah, I was raising money, which is kind of difficult. That was actually more stressful than the training, because asking people for money, I had to raise $4,000. And the journal entries in my book were actually the things that I was sending out to people. And every week I'd send something out and tell another tale of my woe. And people just thought it was hilarious. And so I just kept sending it out. And for fundraising, people want to give, but, you know, they have stuff going on in their own lives. And so I say in the book that repetition is very important for fundraising, because you send people a letter and they're like, oh, this is really good, I'm thinking about doing it. They put it to the side and they just forget. And you can't send them a letter every week, because that's going to get annoying.
Uh-huh.
And but email, especially something engaging, when you do the fundraising stuff, they give you, you know, like a standard letter to send out. But I'm a big fan of, you know, changing up that letter. And even if you're not a great writer or whatever, find one story. There's going to be a million stories that you're going to have. Find one story about, you know, something funny that happened or something that you did that you never thought you would do. Send it out and, you know, do that every couple of weeks to the people who you think. And email is a great thing because it's free and it's a great way to reach people, much better than snail mail these days. And so repetition, 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 hit them. And, you know, tell them a good story. It's something that everybody thinks is an amazing thing. Like, you're training for a marathon. People are like, oh my goodness, tell me about it. I don't know why that is. Like, a marathon is in everybody's head, like, I can't believe you're doing that. And I mean, I would just strike up conversations with strangers about it because I'd be limping, you know? And so, I recommend doing the email thing and just being in touch with people. And it also, it's another thing that you're responsible for, because guess what? If I didn't send out an email, I would get like 5 different emails from people going, I haven't got an update yet. I haven't got an update yet. What's going on? And I'm like, if I had quit, I would have had to tell all those people that I quit. And so it's always good to be responsible to someone.
That's really nice that people were wanting the emails and wanting to know what was
going on. They wanted to know about my pain. They thought it was very funny. They really did. People were evil, evil friends that I had.
They're living vicariously through you, huh?
Yeah, I guess so. I would never do this, but man, you're funny. Sorry, you can't walk. They're not very nice people.
So did you have a coach on this team that you were involved with? Or
Yeah, we had 2 coaches, and they actually, the training schedule at the beginning of the book is by my 2 coaches. I approached them when I got the book deal, and I said, can you guys give me a schedule? Because I wanted it to be, I don't have a schedule. I just had a piece of paper and I went with their schedule, and they were really nice, and they had done a bunch of stuff with the Stroke Association for years and years and years, and they are like fantabulous runners who just run marathons, you know, 4 times a year just for kicks. They're not normal people, but they're really, really sweet, and they know what they're talking about. And so I'd be like, this hurts, what am I doing? And they just, you know, they know what they're talking about, and so they can tell you what to do, and they they encourage you and they give you a schedule. And that's the thing. You print out your schedule and you look at it and you're like, I got to do this. I got to do that. I got to do this. And you just show up and you do it.
So do they give you the whole training schedule?
Yeah, that was bad. When I went, because, well, first, you know you're in trouble when someone hands you a schedule. In the first week, it was at a mile. And I was like, oh, crap, a mile. But, like, why wouldn't it be a mile? You're trying to get all the way to 26. And I literally was like, I can't run a mile on Tuesday. Like, how am I going to run a mile on Tuesday? That was, like, the first run.
Forget about the fact that you're signing up for a 26-mile run.
And then it goes, like, if you look at it, it's very intimidating. And it's in the book, too, where it's, like, 1 mile, then the next 7 days later, 3 miles, and 7 days later, 5 miles. And during that whole time, you're training about 5 days a week. You're running about 5 days a week. And they go up so quickly, you know? You go from 1 to 9 in, like, 4 weeks. What? And you look at that, and it just seems insane. And what seems even more insane is when you get to 9, you're thinking, man, last week I only had to run 7. It's like you just do it because it's on your list of things to do, and you just show up and you do it. And you don't think you're going to be able to do it, but you do. And sometimes you would go up to 9, and then I think it was we went up to 11, went back down to 9 the next week. And I was like, I only have to run 9 miles this weekend. And that was exciting to me. Like, what's wrong? Something has gone terribly off track in my life when I only have to run 9 miles. Like, I actually uttered those words. So it's a bit intimidating to take in the whole schedule all at once. So I would recommend maybe just a page at a time. But, I mean, you have to get up and you will get there. Everybody that there's – I went to a marathon and there's 20-plus thousand people there. And, you know, most of them finished. So most of them did that training. They didn't just show up that day. So you can do it. Just try not to be intimidated by those numbers. Just take one day at a time.
So how long was the training process for?
Mine, I believe, was 3 to 4. I think mine was actually 16 weeks. I think it was 16 weeks, so 4 months. And I believe the one in the book is a little bit longer than that. So, yeah, I had started, and then I think the end of the 16th week, I was laying on a beach in Hawaii.
So let me get this timeline right, because in the book, I thought you talked about doing this one around starting it around in January or getting the idea.
No, I started in August, I believe.
Oh, okay, August.
I think it was either the middle or end of August, and then I ran the marathon in December.
Okay.
Which is actually a really good time to train because it's getting colder. The weather's getting colder instead of warmer. Because it's really a lot better to train when it's cold than when it's hot. But you also have to take in consideration where you're going to be running the marathon. Because it was a lot hotter in Hawaii, where I did the marathon, than it was here in December, obviously. So you have to take those kind of things into consideration. You're training in really cold weather, and then you go someplace really humid. You're not going to be ready for that. So you need to be ready. You know, just know what you're going to be getting yourself into as far as training in your marathon.
So how did you decide to write this book?
Well, I had done the updates, the journal entries I had said before, and everybody was like, these are really funny. You should make a book. And I was like, whatever. And I had phone ringing. Is that my phone?
Modern technology.
It's my phone that wasn't working. That's my phone that I can't figure out. I got a new phone that could probably set off the bomb in China right now if I really wanted to, but I can't even figure out how to answer it. It's fine. I'm not smarter than my phone. I'm sorry. What was the question?
Tell me about writing the book.
Oh, right. So the book, the thing with writing a book is it's kind of like a marathon in that there's a whole process that you have to go through. I had to write a book proposal before I could write the book. And basically it's like a report on your book and what you're going to write about and who your audience is and how you're going to reach that audience. And so instead of writing the book, I actually wrote a book proposal, which was not nearly as much fun as writing the book because it was a report. I'm like, oh, I want to write a report. That's boring. But so I had to do a bunch of research on other books that had been written that are similar. And, it took me about a year just to write the book proposal. I went back and forth with an agent, and it was a long process, but it was one of those things that before I had trained for the marathon, I used to start things and not finish them. Uh-huh. And I definitely, without the marathon, I would not have had the focus it took to finish that that book proposal because it went through countless revisions and it was like, I don't want to do this anymore, you know, and it was hard. It was really hard. And I put it aside for a second and then I come back a couple weeks later, you know, and it kind of evolved over time. Initially, it was going to be just my story of just my journal entries and how I did it. And then it became clear that it needed to be more and try to like guide other people as well. So then we just added a bunch of stuff in there.
Okay. Yeah, you even have information about what kind of clothes to wear and all the different products to use, types of different food and nutrition and training supplements. So there is it is a lot more than just your story. I mean, your story is interlaced throughout the book. But it is nice because it's really broken down to that if you've never ran, you could pick up this book, read it, and then get some good advice and get going.
And it's got some fun parts in there, more interactive stuff. I wanted to do stuff work. I'm a big journaler, as is made apparent by the fact that I have journal entries in there. I'm a big, like, I love writing stuff down. And it's especially something like this, I really, really recommend for people to journal because you really get lost in the day-to-day of, and your knee hurts and you're sweating and you're tired. But you journal and, like, I read those journal entries and it takes me right back to that. And it's such a good way to capture exactly how you're feeling at that exact moment. So there's a... Every section has some sort of interactive segment, whether it be like a true false quiz or it be a something you fill out or a journal segment or something like that. So it's I'm just trying to get people involved in it and get it have fun with it. That's the main thing. You just want to have fun with it, not take it so seriously. A lot of the other books are so like, you know, running is life, but it's also it can be really, really funny, especially if you have a sense of humor. Like when I was running at the actually running, not so funny. But then afterwards, like 2 minutes afterwards, I would start, okay, that's kind of funny. So you just have to, you know, not take yourself too seriously and just have fun with it.
Okay. Yeah, you have your friend Chipper Jen.
Oh, God.
You want to tell the audience about Chipper Jen?
Chipper Jen is my friend Jen, who I've known since high school, who is, she's chipper, to say the least. The girl is... I mean, literally her head could be on fire and she would find some way to be positive about that. Like, she's just so positive. And I tend to be kind of a glasses half empty sort of girl, a little cynical, you might say. And she's not only we played soccer together and I was doing this training and she would come out there with me because she's like, oh, my God, Dawn's running. And so she was so excited. She just wanted to see it herself. And then she would like run backwards in front of me, you know, one of those people that's like, go team, we're almost there, only one more mile. And I'm like, I am going to hurt you. But I could never catch her because she was too fast. And so then she decided to start doing the fundraising with me as well. And so we did the whole thing together. And by together, I mean, she was like 4 miles ahead of me at all times. So we'd run together sometimes, most of the time in actual races, she would just be sitting at the finish line waiting for me for like 20, 30, 40 minutes because she was so good. Like, she's the best runner ever, and she always looked cute. She's all coordinated, just bouncing along with a smile, you know, mile 26, she's just smiling, barely sweating, and I'm like, I hate you. So it was good because she was just really, really positive and I was really, really like in pain a lot, and she was so good at it. And it was like one of those annoying runners is just so good at it and I was so bad at it, so we kind of butted heads a little bit. But you know, I probably couldn't have done it without her. She had a lot of encouragement for me, and she would just keep calling.
Get
you
out of bed on Saturday mornings.
Oh, God. She would call me. I wouldn't answer her calls. I would silence them. I like, couldn't deal with her. Like, I'd have to emotionally prepare to deal with her, like, positive nature at 7 a.m. I'm like, I can't talk to you till at least 8 because you're just going to annoy me. So, yeah, she's good people. She's a great friend, and you know, we had a lot of fun doing it, and we had a lot of laughs, but yeah, she's a obnoxiously chipper.
Well, I think it's important for the audience and, you know, to people to realize that to do something like this, and in anything in life, you need to have a support system, whether it's the person that's there with you doing the, you know, the day in, day out stuff, or even the people that are wanting to know the story. So how's it going? What's going on? Because on those days when you're going, maybe not, you're going, oh, but those people are going to want to know.
Yeah, they're going to ask you. It's just easier to just do it than have to deal with all those people asking you. I had a roommate at the time, and she's a girl that I've known since we were about 7 years old. And she was like, "You're what? What are you doing?" And she has really bad knees, so she couldn't run with me. But she went out and she would take my fundraising slips and just hand them to people. Like, here, write a check, $20. And she raised probably like $500 for me, you know, just going around. And she showed up for every sort of fundraising thing we did. And she was so supportive as a roommate. You know, she, every day I would come home, she'd be like, "Oh, that's so amazing. You went to the gym, you did that," you know. And but she was just in shock because she's known me since we're in second grade. She's like, "What? You know, you won't even walk down to like the mini mart down the street. We get in the car and drive 2 blocks. I'm like, "Shut up." So it, those kind of people that are just really supportive in a bystander sort of way. They're like, "I'm not doing it. You're insane." But go team, you know. So,
okay. So in the book, you talked about napping on runs. And so when I was reading it, I was like, is this really true? Or is this, she just being sarcastic?
I did nap on one run. And that's why it became a joke, because I had incorporated napping into my long distance running. Some call it a nap. Some call it possibly passing out. I called it a nap. I had a little trouble. My strategy for running long distances, like anything over about probably, I think 7 miles was the most I did at like a park. I raced at McKinley Park a lot over in downtown Sac, because it's a mile all the way around. And that's good if you have like 3 miles to do. But if you're doing 18 miles, you don't want to go around 18 times. That means you're going to have to pass your car 18 times and your car is going to be like, "Get into me, drive away." So I would go along the river. They have great bike trails and running trails along the river. And there's a bunch of people out there looking fit and happy. Not me. But you go out halfway and come back in halfway. And so my only option for finishing was to finish. You know, there was no cars, there was no buses, there were no cabs. So I would go out like, and on my 16-mile run, I went out 8 miles, came back 8 miles. And around mile 13, I had some problems. And you really have to, with long distances like that, you have to take in the stuff called goo. Uh-huh. And you're basically replenishing yourself, which is ridiculous that you're running so far that your body just has nothing left. And so you have to replenish yourself before you start feeling like you need to be replenished, because then you're playing catch up and you're never going to win that. And so I started to feel a little woozy. And then by the time I had the goo and everything, it was too late, and I was just going, "Oh, God, okay." And I'm trying to walk, and I'm trying to, like, go, "You're a quitter. You're just being a quitter," you know, trying to get myself psyched up. My body's like, "Yeah, we're done now. Thanks for playing." And so I tried. Like, I sat down on a bench, and then I got back up, and then I sat down, and then I just finally sat down on a bench, pulled my legs up, and put my head down on my knees. And I don't know how long I was out, but when I woke up, I felt a lot better. And then I just finished. It was 2 miles. I walked the rest of the way. I'm like, "I'm fantastic now. You know, napping is great." So, yes. And it was a joke that I napped on long distance runs. It was just at once. And it was bad. I really was like, "What am I going to do?" Because I was by myself, you know, and I don't recommend doing that. I recommend, you know, going out with friends. And you probably don't want to go around napping on park benches on the whole. That's the way, like, bad, scary movies start, you know. So, yes, I did. I napped on a park bench.
Yeah, the glycogen depletion becomes really critical when you go on the long exercises and for long durations.
Yes.
So it sounds like you bonked. We call it bonking when you run out of glycogen.
I call it passed out.
So what was was that your longest training run then?
No, I think I did up to 18. I was supposed to do 21. I did 18 2 weeks in a row, because my last 18-mile one, it's, you know, a funny thing. It's kind of hard to convince yourself to get out of bed on a Sunday to go run 18 miles, especially when I was supposed to do it on Saturday. And I was like, I'll do it Sunday. And then it was like 2 o'clock before I got out of bed, or 1 o'clock before I was out there. And then it was the winter time, so it got dark really early. And I was trying to take it slow because my knee was killing me by that point. And so it was pitch dark, and I'm running, and I'm going, this is another way to start a horror movie, is running in the middle of, you know, the dark bike trail. That's not good. And so I had to cut it short. I was supposed to run 21. And I was like, and when I was heading out, I'm going, "Ha ha, sun setting." So I came back. So I did 18 two weekends in a row, I think. And that was as far as I went. And I was like, I hope that doesn't hurt me, because I didn't go all the way up to the 21 or 22 I was supposed to do.
So would you correspond with your coaches about your training?
Yeah, everybody else went out for these group runs, and I did those a couple times. They were at like 7 a.m. on a Saturday. And when I started in August, and so it was warm. And so there was a benefit to getting up at 7 a.m. because you didn't die of heat stroke. But then as it got to be winter, I'm like, well, why would I get up at 7 when it's still cool at noon? I'm like, see you later, guys. I'm sleeping because I enjoy my sleep quite a bit. So I would get up later and go by myself. And Jen would come with me sometimes. But she was so much better than I was that I really didn't want to feel like I was holding her back. And she would run with me. And I was like, hon, just go, you know, go do your thing. And so I recommend finding someone that's of your same caliber so you don't feel, because I would just stop and go, just run, because I really didn't want to feel like I was holding her back. And so a lot of times I'd end up going out by myself or go with someone that's a little closer to my abilities. But I also don't like talking when I'm running, mostly because I can't, because I would probably pass out from lack of oxygen. And I'm not very happy when I'm running. So the people like Jen would be like blah 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 in my ear, and I didn't really. I would just nod my head every once in a while and then point at something, and then she'd go off on that for a little while. But I did it by myself a lot, and my coaches would email us, and I would email them with questions. I would usually meet up with people afterwards because I was all about like the post game wrap up and the post game complaining and oh my gosh, this hurts. And we would eat, you know, 4 burritos or whatever. So I was all about like the post game stuff, but during the running, I wasn't really with my coaches and stuff. But afterwards, I was.
So your training schedule is pretty intense. We're talking with Dawn Diaz. Did I say that right? The author of The Non-Runner's Marathon Guide for Women. And so you are working. You have this intense training schedule. How do you find time? Because most people could say, you know, I don't have time to exercise. I don't have – so what did you do?
Well, that's something that I talk about in the book is that what you need to do is you need to find a time that you think you can do it, whether it be to get up – an hour earlier or go to bed a little later. Fine. Or some people would do it during their lunch break, which never made sense to me. But the thing is, you have time. You just need to find it and then make it a part of your regular schedule, because you look at your schedule and you're like, I don't have any time to do anything else. But you really do. And when you start to train and you start to work out more, you get this energy that you would never believe you could have, especially after exerting that much energy. I was like, always be like, how can I be doing this much and burning this many calories and have this much energy still? But it just kind of, it gives you energy for everything else in your life. And it's just a matter of scheduling. And there's a lot of people who are doing it who had families. I was single at the time and had no kids. And so I didn't have a lot of responsibilities to anybody besides myself and my TiVo. So, which was very sad during the training. It felt very neglected. But there was a lot of people, a lot of moms go out there and do it. And their partners just really pick up the slack for them, and it's something that's important to them, and it's really good for them, and so they figure out a way to do it. And I don't know how they do it. I never know how moms do all the stuff they do anyway, but you can find a way. There's always a way to find a way. You just need to figure out where in your schedule are going to fit it and then put it there every single day or every single weekend and make it a thing that's on your schedule. And that's all. I mean, we all think we don't have time, but you can. You can make the time. Just move a couple things around, even if it's a half an hour run here or a 15-minute run here, or and then have friends make time on their schedule at the same time. And so you guys all are responsible to show up at that time.
Yeah, I think it is. And you talked about it in the book, and it's about making that commitment and following through with it. I had two women that ran the Nike Women's Half Marathon, mm-hmm. and they came on in the fall, and they talked about their run and how do they fit the training in. And it's just about making that commitment. Maybe you're running with your child in the jogger, or, you know, but you're making that commitment every day to have that time to do that. And that's kind of, you can call it a gift to yourself. I don't know if you would call it a gift to yourself, but
call it a gift to my knee doctor. I had to, at one point I was taking care of my small cousin for a couple of weeks when I was doing the training, and she would just hop on her bike and I would just run. And first she was like, I'll run with you. And I'm like, honey, you're not going to be able to run 4 miles with me. Oh, I can do it. And then, you know, 0.25 miles in, she's like, I'm tired. So we went and got her bike, and then she would just ride along beside me and go around and circle around me and yell at me and taunt me. And then I'd do my mileage and we'd come home, you know, and we'd eat a whole pizza. It was pretty exciting for everyone. So, yeah, you can figure out a way. And it's, I think it's good for kids to see you committing to something and challenging yourself, because they take something away from that, too, to see, look at mom's going outside of her comfort level and really doing something that's not easy. And I think they absorb that kind of stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's important for people to realize that life isn't just always easy, that there are obstacles and, you know, you get.
And to do something for yourself. Yeah. You know, I think a lot of times people do get wrapped up in their kids and their kids' life, which is totally important and what life should be. But it's also beneficial for your kids to see you taking time for yourself and doing things that are important to you. And like, because you're going to become better as a result of doing a marathon. There's going to be things that you find out about yourself, and there's going to be ways that you grow that are going to make you a better person and a better mom, you know? So it's a good thing to do.
And it's better for your heart and your health too. Maybe not for some of your body parts.
Yeah,
but
it's great for your abs. And who doesn't want their mom to have good abs, right? So you're all set.
So let's talk about eating and nutrition, fueling your body. Did your coaches provide information about that?
Yeah, the greatest part of marathon training is the amount of food that you can eat and not gain any weight. I ran like 300 plus miles and I lost not 1 pound because I was just eating like crazy and I was toning up. My body was like this muscle thing. It was awesome. But you have to eat carbs. Like they tell you to eat carbs, 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 carbs. It's great. And it's like they tell you have to carbo load. And I'm like, this is awesome. For anybody that's ever done one of those no carb diets where carbs have little like devil ears, you know, the devil horn. And they like eat more carbs. Like I will. Thank you very much. And you got to, my diet had to change a little bit because it was very fast food heavy prior to that. Mm-hmm. And you could still engage in the occasional, you know, treat and be okay. But I had to start eating, you know, more real food. I actually started cooking at home, which in itself is a miracle. And a lot of, I would do, because I'm single, so it's hard to make food for just one person. So I would make, you know, a bunch of chicken at the beginning of the week and then have chicken and rice and salad. And you want to just balance your carbs and your proteins and try not to have too much fat in there. But I say every once in a while have some fat because you deserve it. And an ice cream sundae is a requirement at least once a week when you're training because it's guilt-free. It's awesome. And donuts, those are really good too. But yeah, you're basically going to be burning so many calories and you're going to need to be refueling your body, and your body's just going to need a lot of calories coming in, which is another amazing thing. And so you're going to be hungry like you've never been hungry before, and you're just going to need to be taking in calories and calories and calories. And usually your coaches will tell you the kind of food you need to be eating, but try to eat balanced but lots of carbs.
And then you use Gatorade. Correct.
I drank Gatorade. I bought like a big old Costco size powder thing of Gatorade and then mixed it myself in my little water bottle. And I would take that in my little water holder butt thingy that I call that you snap around your waist. Uh-huh. And then I would have that when I was running. And I would also hit water fountains when I was running. But you have to have the Gatorade to replenish the electrolytes that you're losing. So it's not just about water. Mm-hmm. The Gatorade and other things, not just Gatorade, but other sports drinks, they're not just for show and pretty colors and taste good. They're replenishing things that you're losing, and they're really important because you're losing a lot of stuff when you're sweating that much and you're running that much, and you need to make sure you're replenishing that. And on the shorter runs, Gatorade's enough for that, and on the longer ones, you're going to want to be taking in stuff like the goo, which basically tastes like strawberry-flavored hair gel. It's not, you know, a culinary delight, but it serves its purpose, which is just kind of hits you with a bunch of nutrients all at once.
Very dense. Very dense.
Yeah, it's tasty.
And then you had like energy bars too, right?
Yes. I was not a huge fan of energy bars. Those ones I had to test out a lot. I used to do like a Harvest bar sort of thing, and Luna Bar makes one specifically for women. The thing with all this is you need to find what works for you. Like, there are a million, you could go to like a running store or even the nutrition aisle, and there's a million choices. So when you go out there, even with the goo or like any of those sort of gooey sort of things, grab three or four flavors, grab three or four different kinds, find something that you like, and then make that what you do every time. And that's part of the marathon training, is getting your body ready for what is going to work for it. Because what works for me is not going to work for you. Mm-hmm. Obviously, like, what works for Chipper Jen is not going to work for me. Everybody's got their own taste. Everybody's got what's going to work with your body. And your body's going through a lot. And you need to do whatever is going to work for it. And so that's really part of it. That's part of what you're doing those three or four months, is just figuring out how you're going to do it and how your body is going to not collapse and how your body's going to stay happy. So I tried a bunch of different energy bars, and I found the one that worked for me, that I liked, that I could tolerate. And I found the energy drink that I liked, that I could tolerate. And that's what I did. And I found the food that my body could handle before I ran. Because some people would have have toast with peanut butter on it before they ran, and some people would have pasta, and everybody had different things. And I think I would have pasta like an hour before I ran, and then I would have pasta before the night before. And you just find what works for you, make it your routine, so that when you get to marathon day, you're just going through your routine, and you're just, you know, you're just doing exactly what you've learned to do, and there's no surprises to your body except for the fact that you're running a marathon.
And that was a good point. You also talked about bringing your marathon clothes with you on the plane, not leaving it in baggage.
Yes, that could be bad. I actually got all the way to Hawaii and didn't have my sports bra, which is a kind of an important thing. And that's with your marathon clothes, it needs to be stuff that you've already tried. No new stuff. That's a rule. No new stuff on marathon day, because most of this stuff really needs, your body needs to rub against it you become one open wound, and then you heal like wherever, especially sports bras, because they rub so many places, and your body just needs to become kind of tough in those areas. And my coaches were, you know, in all caps on the things they handed out: no new stuff on marathon day. And I'm like, ruh-ro, I forgot my sports bra. I bought a sports bra. I didn't run without a sports bra. That would have been dangerous for everyone, I think. They have a little fitness expo there before. So I went to fitness expo and paid like a ridiculous amount of money for a sports bra, and then proceeded to wear it for like the 2 days before the marathon. I just wore it everywhere and moving my arms as fast as I could to try to get the chafing taken care of. But it worked out fine, actually. It was a really nice sports bra. So okay. It worked out fine for me. But a lot of times that could go really, really bad.
Okay. So how does this journey change your lifestyle?
The journey changed my life, probably more than my lifestyle. It changed my basic outlook on life and how I attack things. Like I said before, before this, I wasn't someone who finished things. I've always been like a dreamer, someone with big ideas. And then 2 weeks into it, I don't really want to do that anymore. Or any time it got difficult, I'm like, I don't want to do that anymore. Kind of throw my hands off, walk away. And it kind of stems from my competitive nature, that I want to win everything. Uh-huh. And if I don't feel like I'm winning, I don't want to play anymore. So with the marathon, there's a focus that you just have to have, that you have to have a focus and a determination, and you have to figure out how to do it. And you have to have patience, that I have never been blessed with patience. So it taught me a lot of patience. It taught me a lot of finishing the things that I start. It was the first thing that I've ever started that I finished, probably as an adult. You know, I went to college for a couple of years, dropped out, went to college again, dropped out. Like, I just wasn't real focused on stuff. And I had a lot of finish lines in mind, but never could quite do what it took to get to that finish line. And so it changed how I attack things now in life. And I was working in a cubicle in accounting at the time, and I decided I wanted to do something more creative. And so I, since then, have started a freelance graphic design business and don't work in a cubicle anymore. And I've been able to just change everything about my life because I just have the focus now, and I have the ability to say, this is what I want to do, and this is how I'm going to do it. And it's more about taking the steps instead of just the finish line, you know?
Uh-huh.
So for me, it sounds cheesy and cliche, but it did change pretty much everything about me.
It's interesting because how you started this whole journey with doing the marathon, it started from your grandfather, correct? You did that, and it was like, okay, so you did this marathon training, even though you weren't an a runner, and then look how your life has changed in the end. You have a different, you know, you have your own business. You're a graphic designer, very different than what you were doing before, and the doors that opened. And you've written a book, and now you're going on this book tour. And
yeah, it's like I say all the time that running, and especially marathon training and long distance running, is about 90% mental. It's how you're going to approach it mentally, because whether you think you can or whether you think you can't, you're right. And you got to go out there, because physically it's very physically taxing. But physically, I always say that this is what marathon training is, like just moving, but you don't have anything going on in your head, because like it's different than sports, you know, where you have something that you're actually going after and something that's keeping your mind busy. Uh-huh. It's not keeping your mind busy, because you're just pounding the pavement. And then for hours, literally hours, your mind has to, you have to figure out some way to focus and keep going, because there's no motivation there. It's just you're your own motivation. And so it really just, you take that with you, I think, and you can apply that to so many things in life, to focus and figure out mentally how I'm going to make things happen, you know?
We're talking with Dawn Diaz, the author of the Non-Runner's Marathon Guide for Women. And before we wrap up, I want to talk about, now there's this next part of your marathon journey. And so let's go ahead and talk about that. So what's happening now?
Well, right now, actually on Sunday, we're going to be heading out for about 8 weeks. I'm going all around the country doing a book tour, and I just decided that I was going to try to incorporate some other stuff into the book tour. And so I'm calling the book tour Dream in Motion. And the basic idea is we're going all over the country for the next 8 weeks, and we're trying to get people to move their minds, bodies, and spirit. So I'm trying to get people up and involved in their physical fitness, but also in their communities, because I've become really involved with Habitat for Humanity the past few years and really connected with that kind of side of myself and my desire to really do something. And it's about getting people off their butts and getting involved in whatever it is you want to change, and just get active, you know. And if you want to change your body, change your body. If you want to change your world, change your world. And we're doing the whole thing as a fundraiser for the New Orleans area. And we're going to be ending up there at the end of the tour. We've been doing a volunteer effort there for about 2 weeks in the end of April, beginning of May. And so it's just, I'm just trying to do something of a little more value than just talking about myself for 8 weeks. So hopefully it'll work out.
So how'd you come up with that idea, incorporating that into the book tour?
Well, that's the kind of stuff that I do now. It's a little more me. And one of the cool things about being able to own my own business and do freelance stuff is I've been allowed the time to go pursue these sort of things, you know, like volunteering. I've always wanted to volunteer, and it's hard to do when you have your 9-to-5 job and you have to take your vacation time or whatever. But I work really hard, and then I can take off 2 weeks and go volunteer my time and give back to my community and stuff like that. And it's something that's really, really important to me. And it's really, really a part of my life right now. And so I went out to New Orleans actually in November, and I was like, it's the second time I've been out there in the past year with Habitat. And it's heartbreaking. It's absolutely heartbreaking to go out there. And it's beyond any words to describe what's out there. But at the same time, it's a beautiful city. The French Quarter is still very alive and well. And then you go about a mile outside of there, and it's everything you've seen on TV times a million, because there's no way they could show it all on TV. And so I decided I really wanted to do whatever I was going to do. I wanted it to be a fundraiser for that area and do something for that area, because those are the kind of things that are just important to me right now. And so the idea is there's a lot of stuff that needs to be done there, a lot of stuff that needs to be done everywhere, but people don't have the motivation now. I think people kind of sit back and they get wrapped up in their day-to-day lives, and so they're overwhelmed by it, I think. And so what I'm trying to do is tell people, get off your butt and you can do something. As one person, you can get off your butt and you can really make a difference. And so that's what I decided to do. I really wanted to do more than just promote my book and talk about myself.
So you're going to be going to these different towns, and where's the fundraising part in there? Because I know you're walking, so you want to tell the audience about that part.
Well, we're going from city to city doing anything that can get people moving. We're having little kind of dream in motion events as we go from city to city. Sometimes we're doing walking events. Sometimes we're doing running events. Sometimes we're doing other sort of random fun stuff to try to get people up and moving. And then we're getting sponsors along the way that are going to give us money for every mile that I walk or anybody walks with me. And the idea is to get people out and moving with me, and they don't have to give any money. They just have to come move and be a part of it. And the idea is that your time is your most valuable thing that you have to give. And so I think people need to understand that. And the same thing with the marathon training, where you find time for that marathon training in your day. And it's the most valuable thing, because time, everybody needs more time. But if you can give even a little time every week, you can really make a big difference in your community and your life and everything.
So do you have a website that people can go to look up more information about your
The website is www.dreaminmotion.net. And there's information there about how you can come be a part of what we're doing and my whole schedule for all the events, because we've just got crazy schedule going on right now. And if you want to come out to New Orleans, you're more than welcome too. We're going to be out there for 2 weeks. People can come for 2 days or 2 weeks, whatever they want to do, and come be a part of it. A friend of mine told me last night, because she just started volunteering, and she's like, I recommend everyone to do it once, do it one time, and then you will do it forever, because it's something that you get so much more out of it than you could ever give. So.
And so with the Habitat for Humanity, that part is where you're building homes, correct?
Yeah, yeah. We're going to be going in and volunteering with New Orleans nonprofits, Habitat being probably the most popular and noteworthy of the bunch. But there's a lot of different organizations in New Orleans right now that were born of Katrina. And they're just two people that happen to live in Katrina area, and they're trying to make their community better. And they are decided, instead of sitting around waiting for stuff to get better, they're making it better. And so we're going to be volunteering and giving some money to those areas as well. There's a charity badge, a 6 Degrees of Separation charity badge that's on the site as well. And there's, I think, 4 different charities on there that people can donate to. And then if we're in like the top, whoever raises the most money by the end of the month or whatever, using those charity badges, then they match that money. Kevin Bacon is doing some little promotion thing. But yeah, so I picked like 3 of the smaller charities in the area, because those are the people that it's really like a 2 or 3 man job, and they're trying to bring back a whole city, because there's just miles and miles and miles and miles and miles of destruction. And so Habitat's doing a lot of good work, and it's the work that everybody's kind of noticing because they're a little more, you know, out there in the media. But there's a lot of people doing stuff.
Habitat's very well known, and they've been doing it for such a long time.
And people feel confident giving them their money, because they know that organization. But there's also a lot of other little things going on, and people just want, because that's the thing, you can do a little, everybody can do a little tiny bit, and that's what those people are doing out there. They're a little tiny organization, and they're taking care of their block, or they're taking care of their neighborhood, and they're trying to make it better, because that's what they're going to have to do out there, is little stuff, and every little thing is going to add up to more, because it's too overwhelming to try to think of it in the grand scope of it, because it's just too much.
Kind of like training for a marathon.
Kind of, exactly. See, it's all ties together.
Yeah, well, and I think sometimes people get turned away because they go, oh, well, I don't have that kind of money or that kind of thing, and they don't realize that $25 or $10 or $100, whatever they can give, or if they can give time, those things do add up, because if everybody's willing to give a little, it can grow.
And that's totally the point, is that we're not asking people to give $1 million or asking them to give 3 months of their time. We're asking them to give a little tiny bit, and it totally steamrolls, and it's a ripple effect that you give a little tiny bit, you do a little bit. And if everybody did that, we could rebuild New Orleans in a heartbeat. But it's the scope of it that people get overwhelmed. And if you go there, it's even more overwhelming, where you're like, you want to save everything, but you're going, where do you even start? There's just miles, and like, where do you start? And so a lot of those little charities in town are starting small. They're starting with just the kids, or they're starting with just this one house, or they're, you know, and it's one house at a time, one person at a time. And people need to start thinking a little smaller about things. If everybody just did one little thing, then we could really make a lot of difference.
Wow. So what are your dates that you're going to be in New Orleans? Do you know?
We're going to be in New Orleans from April 21st through May 6th. And we're going to be volunteering Monday through Friday. And then there's this huge jazz festival going on the weekend of the 28th and the weekend of the 5th. It's a really famous jazz festival. So we're going to play on the weekends.
Okay.
Because I think we deserve it after hammering our nails for, you know, 5 days.
Well, Dawn, thank you so much for coming.
Well, thanks
I
for
really
having me.
Appreciated that. And we had Dawn Diaz. She's the author of the Non-Runners Marathon Guide for Women, and her website is www.dreaminginmotion.net. And she was here, and we were talking about her book and also her adventure in helping to rebuild New Orleans area. So thanks again, Dawn, for coming. And thanks for listening to How She Really Does It with Corinne at KDRT LP 101.5 FM. You can catch the replays tonight at 6 p.m., Sundays at noon, Mondays at 7 a.m. Next week, we'll have a UC Davis lecturer and enrolled tax agent here to discuss personal finance and credit issues. See you next week.